I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
A ceasefire now is urgently needed if we want to save whatever is left of our humanity. In fact, it is long overdue.
As the United Nations calls again for a ceasefire in Gaza, Palestinian health officials are warning thousands of women, children, and sick people could soon die as Israel continues its bombardment of Gaza. We'll get the latest. We'll also look at how the police in the United States are cracking down on protests calling for a ceasefire.
We're outside the Democratic Party headquarters because this party claims to be on the side of life and peace and equality. And we're saying that we want them to live up to their values and oppose this horrific war and call for a ceasefire now. And they're being responded to by the police shoving anti-war activists down the stairs.
And we'll go to Atlanta, where police attacked peaceful protesters with tear gas, pepper balls, and flashbang grenades Monday as hundreds rallied against the construction of a massive $90 million police training complex known as Cop City.
They're throwing tear gas into the crowd. They're throwing musicians. Yeah, that's tear gas.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's unceasing bombardment of the Gaza Strip has entered its seventh week, with fresh attacks on residential buildings in the Jabalia refugee camp that killed at least 18 people. On Thursday, Gaza's main telecommunications companies went out of service due to a lack of fuel for generators, plunging most of the besieged territory into another communications blackout. Israeli troops occupied the Al-Shifa hospital for a third straight day, where some 7,000 trapped medical workers and patients face a worsening humanitarian crisis. An Al-Shifa doctor said 43 out of 63 intensive care patients who are on ventilators have now died after supplies of oxygen and fuel ran out. A large number, they say, of premature babies have also died due to Israel's siege on the hospital. On Thursday, Israeli and Egyptian authorities allowed a handful of wounded Palestinians through the Rafah border crossing for treatment in Egypt. This is Ahmed Mazen Abu Shama, a Palestinian boy whose leg was amputated after he survived an Israeli missile strike on his family's home.
People are torn into pieces, a head on one side and a leg on the other side. Entire buildings in one block are demolished by bombings. The Israeli pilot of the plane doesn't know that there are people in these buildings. They want Hamas. What do the people have to do with this? Innocent children. What do they have to do with this to be bombarded? Doesn't the pilot know that they are children?
On Thursday, the Indonesian hospital in northern Gaza reported it had been forced to halt services, leaving dozens of patients who urgently need surgery untreated in a reception area. This comes after Israel bombed the Jordanian field hospital in Gaza and attacked Jordan's government condemned as a war crime. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, says it may soon be forced to suspend all humanitarian operations in Gaza due to lack of fuel. UNRWA's chief said Thursday, quote, I do believe there's a deliberate attempt to strangle our operation. An Israeli drone strike on the occupied West Bank overnight killed three Palestinians and injured 14 others. The bombing came as part of a major raid on Jenin and surrounding communities by Israeli soldiers who used armored bulldozers to destroy streets and surrounded four medical sites, including the Ibn Sina Hospital. Dozens of Palestinians were arrested. Since October 7th, Israeli forces have killed more than 200 Palestinians in the West Bank. The head of U.S. forces in the Middle East is in Israel today for talks with senior Israeli officials. Axios reports General Michael Eric Carilla, the commander of U.S. Central Command, is meeting Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant and top General Herzi Halevi to discuss Israel's assault on Gaza and fighting along Israel's border with Lebanon. On Thursday, Israel's military shelled villages in southern Lebanon and launched drone strikes after Hezbollah fighters fired anti-tank missiles across the border. It was some of the heaviest cross-border violence since fighting erupted in October. Israeli airstrikes hit several targets around Damascus early on Friday. This follows a series of Israeli strikes across Syria, including attacks that took Damascus and Aleppo airports out of service last month, killing two civilian workers. In California, hundreds of protesters shut down all westbound lanes of the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge for several hours Thursday morning, demanding President Biden call for an immediate ceasefire and an end to U.S. military aid to Israel. Police arrested 81 people. The protest came as President Biden met with world leaders in San Francisco at the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit, or APEC. In Boston, Massachusetts, Jewish peace activists led a sit-in protest Thursday that shut down traffic on the Boston University Bridge. In a social media post, the group, If Not Now Boston, apologized to anyone stuck in traffic, but added, quote, "We have tried everything else. We have called, we have marched, we have sung, we have prayed, we have written letters and visited offices. Yet politicians like President Biden and Senator Elizabeth Warren continue to stonewall, and Israel continues to slaughter innocent Gazans by the thousands," unquote. We'll have more on the protests against Israel's assault on Gaza after headlines when we speak with If Not Now spokesperson Eva Bugwart. Democratic Congressmember Becca Bailent of Vermont called Thursday for a lasting bilateral ceasefire in Gaza. Bailent is the first Jewish American congressmember to call for a ceasefire. In a commentary published Thursday, she wrote, quote, "Like me, there are thousands of American Jews that share a deep emotional connection to Israel because of what it meant for the survival of the Jewish people in the face of extermination. This same history also drives so many of us to fight for the protection of Palestinian lives," she wrote. Meanwhile, more than 300 delegates to the 2016 and 2020 Democratic National Convention who backed Bernie Sanders for president called on the Vermont senator to introduce a resolution for a ceasefire in Gaza. Sanders has so far rejected a ceasefire and has called only for short pauses to the fighting. Meanwhile, the Los Angeles Times has become the first major U.S. newspaper to call for a ceasefire. On Thursday, the paper's editorial board wrote, quote, "It's become impossible to distinguish between Israel's decidedly non-surgical operation against Hamas militants in Gaza and the indiscriminate killing of Palestinian civilians. When so-called humanitarian pauses in the bombardment and ground operations are too brief to realistically permit innocents to flee, or when there's no place for noncombatants to go that is not also in the line of fire, such pauses are so deficient as to be meaningless," the Los Angeles Times editorial board wrote. In Russia, artist Sasha Skocelenko was found guilty Thursday of spreading so-called false information about the Russian military and sentenced to 7 years in prison for replacing supermarket price tags with anti-war messages. The labels featured messages like "the Russian army bombed an art school in Mariupol." Around 400 people were hiding inside, it said. Skocelenko was convicted under new wartime legislation that criminalizes any anti-war messaging or activism. In her closing statement after her year-and-a-half trial, Skocelenko said, quote, "How little faith does our prosecutor have in our state and society if he thinks that our statehood and public security can be ruined by five small pieces of paper," she said. This is opposition politician Boris Vishnevsky.
"This verdict is unfair. There is no guilt because Skocelenko is not guilty of anything. I will not even speak about humanity here or about equality before the law because sometimes people receive fewer years in jail for murder than for five price tags in a shop. It's not justice. It's an execution."
In other news from Russia, a former police officer sentenced to 20 years in prison for the 2006 contract killing of Russian journalist Anna Politkovskaya has been pardoned after a military tour in Ukraine. Politkovskaya was best known for reporting Russian abuses in Chechnya, often writing for the now-banned Novaya Gazeta. Another journalist has been killed in Mexico. Ismael Villagomez was fatally shot in Ciudad Juarez Thursday while working his second job as a driver. He was a photographer for the newspaper El Heraldo de Juarez, who had worked in media for nearly 20 years. At least three people were arrested in connection with his death. His colleagues are demanding justice.
Ismael was a good and honest person. He was a good coworker whose life was taken away in this way. We don't want his case to remain unsolved, as has happened with the deaths of other journalists. If the cause was something other than his work in journalism, we want this to be clarified by authorities. And if this is related to his journalistic activity, we want authorities to investigate this even further. The Mexican editorial organization, Ismael's family, and the journalistic community demand clarification of the facts.
At least four other journalists have been killed this year in Mexico, one of the most dangerous countries for media workers in the world outside a war zone. Violence has skyrocketed in Mexico following the enforcement of the U.S.-backed war on drugs. Over 100 immigrants held at the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma, Washington, have started a hunger strike protesting indefinite detention and other inhumane and dangerous conditions. They're denouncing Immigration and Customs Enforcement for failing to properly handle and resolve immigration cases. The group La Resistencia says at least 25 of the hunger strikers have been placed in isolation. Northwest is run by the for-profit prison corporation GEO Group. In Kentucky, a judge declared a mistrial in the federal civil rights trial of the ex-Louisville police officer who fired his gun during the deadly 2020 raid on Breonna Taylor's home. The jury deadlocked over whether to convict Brad Hankinson, who was charged with using excessive force and violating the rights of 26-year-old Breonna Taylor, her partner, and Taylor's next-door neighbors, where some of the officer's stray bullets ended up. Hankinson faced a maximum sentence of life in prison. He was acquitted last year on three state counts of endangering Taylor's neighbors. Federal prosecutors will now have to decide whether to hold a retrial. A federal jury in California has found a right-wing conspiracy theorist guilty of attempted kidnapping and assault charges after he invaded the San Francisco home of then-House Speaker Nancy Pelosi last year and attacked her husband, Paul Pelosi, with a hammer. Ahead of the attack, 43-year-old David DePape shared QAnon conspiracy theories and false claims about the 2020 election and the January 6th Capitol insurrection. He faces up to 50 years in prison at a future sentencing hearing. Embattled New York Congress member and serial liar George Santos said Thursday he won't seek re-election after the House Ethics Committee found substantial evidence the freshman Republican committed numerous felony crimes. In their report, House Ethics investigators found Santos, quote, sought to fraudulently exploit every aspect of his House candidacy for his own personal financial profit. He blatantly stole from his campaign. He deceived donors into providing what they thought were contributions to his campaign, but were in fact payments for his personal benefit, unquote. United Auto Workers members have approved new contracts with the big three automakers. Among other things, union members will see their pay increase by 25% over the course of the deal. Two-thirds of Ford workers voted in favor of the deal, while only about 55% of workers at General Motors agreed to ratify their contract. Stellantis appears set to approve the deal at similar margins to Ford. Some more senior employees have objected to the deal, saying pay increases should be higher. Others have expressed disappointment pension benefits weren't expanded to employees hired after 2007. In related news, Stellantis has offered buyouts to half of its non-unionized U.S. staff as part of a cost-cutting move. And thousands of Starbucks workers held a one-day strike Thursday on Red Cup Day, one of Starbucks' busiest days of the year. Workers say frequent promotional events and giveaways like yesterday's creates extra stress and unmanageable workloads. Organizers say Thursday's walkout was the largest in the coffee chain's history. A historic union drive has swept over Starbucks stores nationwide in the past 2 years. Over 360 locations are now unionized. This is Edwin Palmasoulis, a Starbucks worker in New York.
want to make sure that we have a better pay, staffing scheduling, and we have the right amount of hours to work because they've been improperly staffing us. And sometimes it just makes it harder for us to work. You know, sometimes we feel like we work for two people instead of one. And we're just tired. We're just really tired of overworking ourselves.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden's facing increasing pressure to call for a ceasefire in Gaza, but instead, the White House is rushing more arms to Israel. Bloomberg is reporting the U.S. has quietly sent Israel more laser-guided missiles for Apache gunships, as well as new army vehicles, bunker buster munitions, and more ammunition. On Wednesday, the United States abstained from a United Nations Security Council vote in support of extended humanitarian pauses in Gaza. Meanwhile, protests are continuing across the United States calling for a ceasefire. In California, police arrested at least 81 protesters after they blocked traffic on the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge for several hours. In Boston, protesters shut down the Boston University Bridge. Many of the protests calling for a ceasefire have been organized in part by two Jewish organizations, If Not Now and Jewish Voice for Peace. On Wednesday, the groups helped organize a protest at the Democratic National Committee's headquarters in Washington, D.C., where House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries and other lawmakers were gathered. U.S. Capitol Police violently moved in on the protesters as they held hands to block the entrance to the DNC. Police described the protests as, quote, not peaceful, and claimed that protesters pepper-sprayed officers. But images from the protest shows it was officers who deployed pepper spray and that officers used force to remove the demonstrators. This is Eva Borgwart, national spokesperson for If Not Now, speaking during the police action.
We're outside the Democratic Party headquarters because this party claims to be on the side of life and peace and equality. And we're saying that we want them to live up to their values and oppose this horrific war and call for a ceasefire now. And we're being responded to by the police shoving anti-war activists down the stairs, shoving peaceful protesters back with their bikes. And because our party that 80% of us want a ceasefire, would rather beat up protesters.
Hold on. Let me continue.
Organizers say 90 people were injured outside the DNC. Capitol Police say six of their officers sustained injuries. One person was arrested. One lawmaker who was inside the DNC, California Congressmember Brad Sherman, took to social media to describe the demonstrators as, quote, pro-terrorist, anti-Israel protesters. On Thursday, President Biden called into a DNC meeting to express his appreciation for how law enforcement handled the protest. We're joined right now by that person you just heard, Eva Borgwart, national spokesperson for If Not Now. Thanks so much for joining us from D.C., Eva. If you can start off by calling for, by explaining why you focused on the DNC, and then describe what happened and respond to Congressmember Sherman saying you were pro-terrorist.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for having me. And yes, the focus on the DNC was because, as we know, the majority of Americans and certainly the majority of Democrats want a ceasefire. And our lawmakers are not listening to the thousands of calls and constituent meetings that we've been trying to, ways that we've been trying to reach them over the past month. And so this was, like many protests across the country, an act of nonviolent civil disobedience. The goal was to assemble peacefully, call attention to the urgent situation in Gaza, and ask for democratic leadership to act and call for a ceasefire now, a release of the hostages, a hostage exchange, and a de-escalation, and to address the root causes of this violence, decades of occupation, apartheid, and siege. And unfortunately, police chose to escalate, and with no verbal warnings or communication with police liaisons who were trying to speak with them, they started shoving protesters down the stairs and shoving protesters back with their bicycles and trampling on the 11,000 tea lights that protesters had brought to represent the Palestinians who have already been killed in Gaza. And as you mentioned, Democratic lawmakers, including Congressman Brad Sherman, have said that these protesters are pro-Hamas. Speaker Mike Johnson said that this was an anti-Semitic protest, which is frankly absurd because for many reasons, but primarily so many of the protesters are not only Jews, but who have loved ones who were either murdered by Hamas on October 7th, or Jews and Palestinians who have loved ones either in Gaza or who know people in Gaza who have lost dozens of members of their families over the past month. And so to say that these, again, many of them personally grieving protesters are pro-terrorist is absurd. Let's be clear that police escalated this protest.
Rather than characterize what Congressmember Brad Sherman said, as I did at the beginning, let's hear what he said on CNN Wednesday night.
There are over 200,000 pro-Israel demonstrators with a permit, entirely peaceful. And here you have a demonstration less than 1,000th as large that's also getting publicity. And it's getting publicity because their willingness to attack police, as they did with pepper spray, is a force multiplier.
So he's contrasting the protest you had in front of the DNC with the pro-Israel march that took place a few days ago. Your response to what he's saying. Also, I know a number of reporters outside were scratching their heads when he talked about pro-terrorist protesters.
Yes, thanks, Amy. And yes, his words do speak for themselves. I mean, first of all, let's also be clear that there have been hundreds of thousands of nonviolent march, hundreds of thousands of peace activists, Palestinian, Jewish, multiracial, multi-faith, rising up across the U.S. and millions around the world. And so to contrast Wednesday night's demonstration with the only with the Tuesday demonstration, the pro-Israel march at the Capitol, is telling because it's impossible for politicians like Brad Sherman, who are refusing to call for a ceasefire, to acknowledge the massive peaceful uprising that is happening around the world in support of the people of Gaza, because the public, the international community, sees Palestinian lives and Israeli lives as equal.
Eva, on Thursday, yesterday, Vermont's sole congressmember, Becca Bailent, became the first Jewish congressmember to call for a ceasefire. That's very interesting because one of the senators of Vermont, Bernie Sanders, has not called for a ceasefire. In fact, if not now, protesters have been arrested in his office requesting that he call for a ceasefire. Your response to both Bailent and Sanders?
Yes, well, and I was also at that protest at Senator Sanders' office earlier this month. And I think in particular for Jewish lawmakers, as a Jewish movement, as the Jewish movements that have been protesting for ceasefire, we are doing this for safety and freedom for Palestinians who are under siege, and also because we are terrified of for our loved ones in Israel and in the entire region if this escalates into a broader regional war. And our disappointment in Senator Sanders so far refraining from calling for a ceasefire is that he has made his legacy as an anti-war champion. And so we are extremely grateful to Congresswoman Bailent for speaking out from a Jewish perspective for ceasefire, because we feel that our Jewish values and our safety as Jews is extremely, extremely contingent on ending this horrific violence and calling for a ceasefire now.
And finally, Eva, you were an organizer for President Biden during his 2020 campaign. If you can talk about your response to his position now and what this means, and what you feel Biden supporters then are feeling today.
Yes. So, like you mentioned, I worked for President Biden in Arizona in the 2020 election. Let's be clear. I am terrified of Donald Trump and the white supremacist anti-Semitic movement that's behind him. And I feel immense stake in the Democratic Party winning in November 2024. And frankly, again, I am deeply terrified and angry at Democratic leadership for ignoring the calls from the majority of their base for a ceasefire, a hostage exchange, and a de-escalation, creating a lack of faith in the Democratic Party that I am very concerned will hurt Democrats' chances in November. And I encourage them with the fullest emphasis possible to reverse course now. We have seen so far that for some Democrats, 1,400 Israeli deaths and over 4,000 Palestinian deaths were enough. Now, for other Democrats, 11,000 Palestinians in Gaza killed are not enough for them to call for ceasefire, which is how we know this horrific violence will end and move toward a political solution in the region. And so we are waiting to see how many Palestinian lives our Democratic politicians need in order to call for ceasefire. And every day, every hour that they wait has, I fear, implications for what will happen in November.
Finally, I wanted to ask about the powerful lobby group AIPAC, that's the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, stepping up its support for primary challengers to lawmakers who voice support for a ceasefire. Slate magazine reports AIPAC is expected to spend somewhere around $100 million in Democratic primaries backing opponents of House progressives like the Squad. Your response?
Yes. So if not now is currently prior to October 7th, if not now's main focus was around the campaign, around AIPAC and making sure that the Jewish public in particular and the American public understand that these days AIPAC is those $100 million and the money that AIPAC is spending in these elections is primarily from far-right billionaires, and that AIPAC is functioning essentially as a way for these Republican billionaires to interfere in Democratic primaries. And in particular, around escalating their spending or threats of spending against those calling for ceasefire, AIPAC has always been determined to prevent any kind of conditionality on U.S. support for Israel, any human rights conditions consistent with U.S. law, and any daylight between the U.S. and Israel. And now, in attempting to punish any of the lawmakers who are taking a moral and pragmatic stand in calling for ceasefire, they are demonstrating that even the genocidal, and let's call it genocidal because it is, rhetoric from, as you have on this show many times, rhetoric from the Israeli leaders in the government right now is not enough to warrant conditionality in U.S. support. And frankly, I am also extremely terrified about the implications of punishing politicians for not supporting, again, this assault on this massacre in Gaza. Because if we say, if AIPAC is determined to tell the American public that supporting an unfolding genocide, that speaking out to oppose unfolding genocide is beyond the pale in the realm of political acceptability, what is going to become of us and what is going to happen to this world?
Eva Bargwart, I want to thank you so much for being with us, national spokesperson for If Not Now, one of the organizers of Wednesday's protest at the Democratic National Committee headquarters in Washington, D.C. Coming up, independent journalist Sharif Abdelkaddous on the latest in Gaza and the West Bank, and his new documentary on the Cop City protests in Atlanta. Stay with us. In La Cantara.